coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea, this is Hey Kids Comics. We are back. We are
calling all ships at sea. Calling all ships at sea. Hey Kids Comics is now commencing. Repeat.
We've been warming up.
Maintain radio silence except for this show.
Everything
the crowd
from
love it.
What? Mel Gibson's ass to anti-Semitism to this is what you miss. What we should do is just get a Patreon thing and release uncut episodes of Hey Kids Comics to the masses, because you guys,
I think that would be appropriate, because you'd be amazed what goes on before and after the show. And
yes, you would. Absolutely. So this issue of Hey Kids Comics was one that Cole came up with that really struck a chord with me. I like this topic a lot. So, Cole, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, tonight this is two of a kind, and this is where we literally delve into what would effectively be the buddy pictures of comic books. And I think for me this was a topic that was going to be the one that struck closest to the Hey Kids Comics thematically. It is Hey Kids Comics. It's much like these kind of buddy picture, best friend kind of team ups. That's sort of how this show got started 200 plus episodes ago.
221 episodes ago.
Yes,
good
indeed.
Lord. Yeah, no, you're right.
Plus, like, annuals and specials.
Like, you know, we've had if you want to break it down origin story style, you know, we were on opposite sides of the U.S. doing our thing. We got brought together on a team because the challenge was greater than one person could handle.
Yeah, I think what happened was that Rick had run afoul of Loki again.
I know.
And my help alone wasn't enough, so he found that there was some picture of you giving Loki a boot up the ass on Facebook, so he invited you on to Amazing Comic Cast, and the rest is history. So,
right.
I don't know how that one crosses paths with that particular picture.
You search for it. That's the only way you can find it.
I guess at a moment of desperation, when you have run afoul of Loki, you start casting about, grasping at any straw, and next thing you know, there's a picture of somebody giving him the boot.
Actually, he went to Nick Fury in the form of Steve Swanson and asked, you know, if they had anybody in their database who could put a boot up Loki's ass, and Steve was like, well, I know from Muppets, so here's Andy.
Well, that's true, yeah, because and you got to hand it to C. Swanson. He makes some great frozen dinners.
He really does, and makes some great luggage, which is an inside joke.
Oh.
which is an inside joke between some of my college friends, including Steve. So, so this is a great topic, because we were talking about off board, we've done shows about team ups, and we've done shows about groups, but we've never done one about the tried and true friends in comics, and there are a lot of them, and there's a lot of cool relationships and dynamics there to talk about. Well, where would you like to begin our friendship journey?
Absolutely. I think it's important to point out going in that, you know, like you said, we've talked about the sidekick dynamic, and that's where either you somehow just have this sort of alpha dog situation where you get some adventure-eyed teen to be your
never going anywhere. Never going anywhere.
I had to bring Adventure Eyed back into the mix.
Forever, but, Adventure Eyed Teen will be forever be in the lexicon.
Absolutely. So, you know, where do you? I don't know what's going on there. Okay, but effectively, what I wanted to talk about was those situations where, oftentimes, an unlikely pairing might occur.
Right.
Some very shrewd author will pick up on the fact that, you know, there's a couple of characters that might be a good fit. And more often than not, it's just existing characters that someone puts together.
Yeah, somebody that they've managed to through the amniocentesis or the organic synthesis of writing a comic, you stumble upon a pairing of people that, because of the world that you've created or the world that you took over creating, these two work really well together. So why not put them together and see what kind of sparks fly?
A lot of them are really just kind of very unique. Understanding of the real dynamic behind some of these characters. And I think, I would argue that one of the grandpappies is the Green Arrow, Green Lantern. Because, beyond just, look, they're both the, DC's most popular green, half of which appear in a Donovan song. So, you've got that going for you right off the bat. But it really transcends that. There's more to it than meets the eye.
Well, not to mention, the Muggerville 7 version of the hard-traveling heroes, which is Crimson and Clover.
Yes, because that whole storyline was repeated.
Thank you. God, thank you. I was praying.
It just kept repeating and repeating and repeating.
It was like Looper. You didn't know where it stopped or started. It was really well written.
They completed one another.
It was like Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
So... Thank you, Cole, for picking up on where I was.
Every now and again, I actually managed to work out where you're headed. If you don't personalize it, I'm probably pretty good at it. But if you try to do a recall joke or something I say daily, it will stop me cold. I don't know. It's like my kryptonite.
Well,
I think that really the pairing of Green Lantern and Green Arrow was a very clever take on getting it was the unlikely pairing, really.
Well, it's what we see all the time in movies and TV shows, right? And what I was thinking about when we were going into this was, what makes I was talking about it before the show, what makes that two-hander work?
It works.
It works so well. What makes that comic book, or movie or TV show, what makes the Lethal Weapon series work? What makes 48 Hours work? What makes the Hard Traveling Heroes work? And I think the answer, there's a bunch of different reasons, but you've got to have the first thing, and the reason that this worked for me as a fan of Green Lantern, and we talked about it back, I think, when we were in the very, the third issue of Hey Kids Comics, when we talked about racism. And
I believe so.
Is that you have the military man, you have the staunch police guy in Hal Jordan, the black and white rules are rules.
I mean, he is the ideal. I never really thought of him so much as a military, but I mean, he literally was, because he was a test pilot for Ferris Airlines for Ferris Aircraft, and also becomes this sort of super policeman of the galaxy.
Right.
Kind of inadvertently, but boy, does he embrace it. I mean, he becomes the man.
You're absolutely right.
On an intergalactic level.
On the biggest stage you could possibly be the man on,
right. He's there coming, into every planetary hood and messing with their stuff,
And on the flip side of that coin, you've got Ollie Queen, who is hyper-liberal, hippie, Robin Hood, literally, right? Basically, the idea is that, socialism, liberal, those ideas manifest in that character. And to build those two characters, again, like you were saying before, these two, they came out of a comic book together. Business-wise, both of their titles were flagging, and they needed to try to boost some sales and put some stuff together. But, from a writer's standpoint, from Denny O'Neill's standpoint, because Denny did this, which, God bless him, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Couldn't
he didn't have just write little sidebars as an editor. I've seen issue 247.
But, Asterisk Denny. Asterisk D. O'Neill.
Denny was sort of, Denny O'Neill in the editorial notes was sort of like the Sergio Aragonés of text.
It was somehow illuminated with text.
Yes, it was just, rather than having, you know, little squiggly caricatures in the margins of Mad Magazine, you just had little notes from Denny to remind you of issues you didn't ever read because they were 20 ago, and you just picked up this one on the 7-Eleven rack.
Right, from a rack jobber. I was actually, when I was at Gym City Comic-Con over the weekend, I was talking to somebody, and I used the term rack jobber, and he looked at me as if I had spoken in an ancient forgotten language that only he remembered.
It's like, oh, truly, forsooth, you have revived our native tongue.
Right. I said something about, you know, maybe I think I picked it up. You know, it must have been like, you know, some rag jobber must have dropped it off and, you know, something, blah, blah, blah. And he looked at me like, what? Like, I haven't heard that.
It's like, He-Man, I thought you were only a legend.
Well, it was almost Star Trek. Like, now there's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Right. It's like Indiana Jones, you know, this language hasn't been spoken on Earth in 1,000 years.
But yeah, so what Denny did was...
Well, that, and meanwhile, you know, some millennial nearby is looking it up on Urban Dictionary, trying to find out if he can get a rack job.
And somewhere Siri is in row your boat.
Oh, yes. Somewhere a Siri unit is weeping.
So they... Siri units. They but Denny took these two characters and you know, Denny in combination with Neil Adams. So you can't beat that combination, number
one. No, that was a 1-2 punch.
God.
And the perfect pairing for this perfect pairing, because they as a team, and especially as the author, Green Lantern Green Arrow is recognizing that you have these two very iconic characters who have a very different approach to fighting crime on different levels. You have the intergalactic policeman, and then you've got the street-level vigilante with a bow who has this strange habit of basically breaking into his own mansion, collecting some of his own valuables, and distributing them to the poor in his own neighborhood, which is just an untenable dynamic. Don't let Robin of Locksley fool you. It may work on paper, but it, you know, it's like communism, just not going to happen.
But they almost did the Kane and Kung Fu thing, where they weren't taking on giant cosmic threats. They weren't really going after Mentallo or Sinestro or Dr. Polaris. You know, they were dealing with social issues and everyday issues and telling those analogous stories that worked so well when you had this straight-laced cop guy and this, you know, super liberal Robin Hood guy.
I'll challenge you with something here. Would this not be the ideal basis, and in many ways also arguably be the precursor to a Netflix series?
Oh, I think it would be fantastic. I think it would be amazing.
But in many ways, I think that's exactly what you're getting with a lot of these Netflix superhero series, is that kind of exploration of character.
Oh, sure. Of course. And it's less about Cottonmouth, and it's less about the Purple Man or Kingpin or Madame Gao and what's his name from Game of Thrones? I can't remember his name. from the Lord of the Rings series. And more about the social disparity that they're fighting. Very, very astute and also accurate. And you know, they ran the gambit from racism, because we talked about the Martin Luther King issues of Hard Traveling Heroes, and we also and also the drug addiction stuff with Speedy. Yeah, just insane.
He ironically named Speedy. Yeah.
And then flip that coin, that possibly the first time outside, you know, I'll say this, really the second time that's that type of relationship's really been explored, at least to the links and breadths that it had from the first time, which I feel personally the really lackluster example, which is the Superman-Batman relationship.
I think that that's one of those... it's a DC chestnut that's had to evolve into all manner of flora, because there was a time when Superman Batman worked, and a time when Superman Batman became untenable, and a time when Superman Batman became workable enough, despite the fact that it really... You're having to have a tremendous suspension of disbelief. Not that, a rich orphan could create the technology and build himself up mentally and to be the ultimate mental and physical specimen to fight the very reason he was orphaned, combined with a strange visitor from another planet who can leap tall buildings with a single bound. I'll give you all that. But it was really hard to get those two together, you know, absent any kind of Martha epiphany, which, while fascinating, is not on the epiphany scale, not equally untenable. But I think, you know...
Does it come in a little blue box? Oh, he went to epiphanies.
Yes. I got it at Epiphanies.
I got it at Epiphanies. I think I had one.
Yes, indeed. Why don't you two get a room?
I just don't. There are times where it's worked for me, and there are way more times where it hasn't worked for me. And
absolutely.
It just...
I have to make an aside, though, on the whole Martha issue, very briefly. One of the best things that came out of AllCon was a friend bringing me this wealth of promotional materials from retail stores. One of which was a completely unused Superman v. Batman kit that includes a massive, one of those bus window type decals.
Yes.
You somehow can, like, have Superman X-ray vision with from the inside, but from the outside it looks like a solid image.
Yep.
And amongst the effects that were in this colossus of a box, you know, there's like a banners and streamers and what have you. And balloons. If one had helium at hand. You had these, I think there were five or six of the smelliest, if you took it right out of the package, the most toxic smelling vinyl capes. They were red with the Superman Batman logo amalgam that was the logo for the film.
Right. The human centipede logo.
Yes, the super centipede. Or like a millipede. On the, you know, mid-back. And so I was distributing them amongst my crew, and we were all running around, terrassing around the show floor that evening. I think it was Saturday night, and I declared us that we were this gang, the Marthas. And Marthas invaded AllCon, and I wanted to share that. I will try to remember to put a picture of the Marthas.
That would be a great, an actual great, and I don't think anybody would pull it off besides like Moore or Morrison or, you know, a fraction or like use that in a comic, you know, like somehow manage to work that in. I don't know how you would, but it would be really cool to see.
Would endorse it as the creator of the Marthas, and I think I can speak for the rest of the gang and say that the Marthas would completely endorse that.
As the leader of the Marthas, sounds like the best prison gang ever, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The Marthas, we ran roughshod over that evening.
I like the dynamic. I like the dynamic of Batman and Superman as in their friendship less than I like the dynamic of Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent's friendship.
Yes, I can buy into that a lot better.
There was one time that I really liked the way that the Batman Superman friendship was presented was in the retelling of how Supergirl came to Earth. It was in the Batman Superman comic that they did a little while ago. I think
quite a number of years back. I would say about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we had the shop when that was coming out, and early on it was kind of fun and an interesting take, and then it just went off the rails, and then you had to start bringing in Bizarro and Bat-Zarro. And
yeah, that book went a little nuts. But the Supergirl run, which was Loeb and Turner. So of course it was just cheesecake art all over the place.
Yeah, it was like, Supergirl is Joni Long Torso.
That's Finnish, right? Joni Long Torso. But the cool part of that.
It was a sequel to Pippi Longstockings.
The cool part of the book to me was that it showed Superman going to Batman for advice on how to raise a kid.
Yeah.
As little Batman knows about actually not destroying a child, Superman knows even less.
Simultaneously destroying him. You know, it's the damnedest thing.
Superman knows even less. And the other dynamic there that I really like is how Superman in their ongoing friendship really took to Dick Grayson as the ward of Batman, even to the point of giving Dick Grayson his name on Krypton, his crime fighting name on Krypton, or
yes, exactly, or his father's
crime,
Kal-El's, yeah. Yes, in fact, that's kind of interesting because they were both orphans,
right?
Kal-El's family were killed by basically the entire planet falling apart, which is not dissimilar to having your acrobatic parents shot doing
six
a high
one,
wire
really.
Act.
Six of one.
It really is remarkably almost identical circumstances. And then you factor in that they also, little known fact, it was Martha Grayson.
No. No, not everybody who dies is named Martha.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the Martian Manhunter, John Jones.
Martha Manhunter?
It was Martha Manhunter. Martha.
Okay, so M apostrophe.
It's Martian, you know. I'm not racist, but that's how they spell things. That's how they spell things on Mars, you know?
That's right.
It's not stereotypical. That's just, you know, cultural.
So, yeah, do you have any outs, like, do you remember any outstanding Superman Batman moments that you, because I really struggle with that relationship.
Yes, there is one absolutely wonderful conceit in the equally wonderful, it was like either, I think it was like a 2-issue series, maybe 3, World's Finest.
Yeah.
That revived that title. The World's Finest was effectively Superman Batman decades before Superman Batman. That's right, kids, it already happened. But literally somewhere between the World's Finest and Superman Batman, there was a brief, like, 2-issue revival of that title. And it was this great story. I think Steve Rude did the art for that, or somebody like that. They had a wonderful, I remember reading a review of it and somebody remarking about how brilliantly the artist conveyed things like, at one point, Clark is saying something and Lois is doing that thing where she kind of is, you could tell. And I went back and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even notice. Brilliantly conveyed that sort of thing where you kind of blow your hair upward.
Right.
If you have long bangs, and like, oh my God, that's exactly what's going on there. But it was the end, which was also parodied by myself and Steve McCauley in the Atrocious Universe of Steve, or my brother, anybody's listening. I have to point out how this was done. And it was where the storyline takes place just right around Christmas. And there's this exchange of gifts. I can't even remember what Bruce gives to Clark, and I can't remember if they. I think they were in costume as their alter egos, but they may have been just as Bruce and Clark. And of course, this kind of dates it a bit. The gift for Batman is a VHS copy of Zorro.
Oh, nice.
And there's this sort of, you know, pregnant pause there, and he's like, "Oh, do you have it already?" And, you know, in that even more poignant kind of Martha way, it was just a wonderful bit of irony there. And, of course, in the Atrocious Universe, the character Mr. Chips had an incident where he beat up Santa. And so Steve brilliantly did a little sidebar on one of the – all we ever did with that thing was just draw covers of these ridiculous characters' comic book adventures.
Right.
And on one of the covers there was a Christmas with the Lukewarm Legion. And I think it was Damnation is giving Mr. Chips a copy of Santa Claus the Movie. And I knew exactly what Steve was conveying there.
That's awesome.
Like, damn you! You knew I read that book.
Well, my problem with Batman is always been the same, and I was going to get into this later, but this seems like an apropos time. Is that he quits every team he's on. I feel like the reason that they're friends is because Clark is too, and I don't want to say milquetoast, but he's too. He's the guy that always lets the guy come to the party that you know is going to be a bummer. Like, he always invites the guy that you don't want.
Yeah, because it's the right thing to do. Because
it's the right thing to do. So
it's like, you know, going to the prom with a Napoleon Dynamite.
Where Batman will quit a team like Steve Martin quits the Jerk. I don't need you. And he always ends up just, like, hanging out in the rafters. I think we talked about this before. But he's, I don't need to be on this team. All I need...
Arthur, what are you doing? Didn't you quit last week? You're here. Yeah, I'm still on the team.
Yeah, I'm on the team. You're not. You quit. You gave back your communicator.
I'm on the team of you and me. Batman, Aquaman. Imagine that title.
You gave back your boom tube clicker?
Yeah, I'm on the team. I said it. I said I'm on the team.
Like, no, you're not.
Like, I don't have a teleportation code anymore, and here I am. I'm Batman.
Like, I don't need you. I don't need you, Martian Manhunter. All I need is this lamp and this thermos.
Coder and this Legion Flight Ring.
You can't
have the Legion Flight Ring. That's Vitech that was left to us from our friends in the future. You can't have that.
He's reaching over while they're talking. He's reaching over trying to slowly, nondescriptly grab Green Arrow's boxing glove arrow. Like, I need this. No, you don't get that. It's mine. It's not yours.
This isn't a divorce. You don't get, like, half of our stuff.
No, the equation in my brain for Batman... In reference
to... That is my clownfish, mister.
In reference to, like, the idea that...
I'm sorry.
That Clark always has to invite him to... You know, he's the one that invites him to the party and nobody wants him there. Like he is the... If you've ever had the friend who comes to your house and only brings... Buys, like, Taco Bell and only brings it for himself...
No, trust me. I had a friend who one time showed up to a gathering or showed up for a visit with a, and we opened the door and were presented with the big ass bag of peanut M&Ms.
Yeah.
And half eaten.
Right.
And he had the unmitigated gall to say, I kid you not, this is God's truth, I brought you something.
No, I just see Batman blowing by everybody and going and sitting at the table alone and just eating his fourth meal.
Like, fourth meal, yeah. He's like hanging in the rafters or something.
Just doesn't even acknowledge anybody. Did you bring enough for everybody, Bruce?
No, I was hungry. I was out late. I was I fight crime.
I didn't know there'd be any food here. So you didn't think to bring it up for everybody if there wasn't going to be food here? Like, that's the kind of jerk he is.
Yeah, you're rich and you have a vehicle that you're not carrying anyone else around in presently. Too soon? This was back in the Jason Todd period. I'm sorry.
Should
have set up the time frame.
No, it could have been any of them. You stay home. You don't get fight crime tonight. Like, what?
Daddy's going to the JLA party. It's not a party. They're having a meeting.
It's a party because I said it's a party. Batman brings the party.
Batman brings the party and talk.
You can't do it. You got to train your voice to Batman.
Yes, all right. How does Conroy do it?
I don't. That's his voice. That's how he does it.
Oh, that's true.
He doesn't have another voice. That's
now you have to eat a tremendous amount of Taco Bell.
That's how you get it. It's his fourth meal every meal. Batman brings the party.
And Diet Coke, apparently.
But yeah, that's...
Tim Burton's Batman, we'll get that one.
I got that one.
Bless you.
But yeah, that's... That relationship always bugged me. There are other great relationships, though. And I'm going to touch on a few. We don't have to get into them because we're already somehow running long, like, in this segment.
Yeah.
But you've got, like, Quantum and Woody, which is one of my favorite two-handers, buddy books, where they have to be together because of these quantum bands that got stuck on them. So they literally have to be together or they die. So I love that. Where do we land on the Thing team-ups?
That's the tough one because, like, there are team-ups and then there are those sort of team-ups that become cemented and become synonymous with the characters.
Right.
Like, you know, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
Oh, yes.
Where essentially somebody said, you know, let's take DC's two biggest yuckster crime fighters who are more in it for the fun and the thrill, and for Ted Kord to get out of the lab and show off all of his tech.
Right.
I'm sorry. Frankly, Bug is so much obviously an appendage that you half expect the back of that ship to have truck balls on it. Sending a message, are we, Ted?
And then you give it to Geffen and Demetaeus, yes. Who are just amazing comedic writers. Just so good, so good. There's so many awesome moments with the two of those that, you know, that's what, in fan polls, constant fan polls, that's the comic book that people want to see.
Yeah.
Or the movie that people want to see based on a comic book. And that's awesome.
Oh, I would love to see someone take that in and run with it in exactly that way. And I think Deadpool is a trailblazer there. I don't think that Warner is capable of recognizing that. They would want to turn it into, I'm Blue Beetle.
No, it would be real serious,
That's not Blue Beetle. That's Batman in a Blue Beetle costume.
That's,
you know, throw down the smoke bomb. I am the Knight. What the? Dad, are you all right there? Why are there, like, broken taco shells everywhere?
No, but the stuff coming out of the Justice League International, the Justice League Detroit stuff, that was the golden age of the Booster Gold Blue Beetle. Just high. But the cool thing about that was Lethal Weapon, right?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't serious, but they dealt with a lot of kind of serious interpersonal stuff in there. Because you had Booster Gold, who was constantly trying to prove himself. Both of them, actually. Because, you know, as we talked about in that moment when, the Blue Beetle was always third tier. Nobody, no matter how smart he was, no matter how much money he was, no matter how good his tech was, he was never looked on with any kind of seriousness.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Wayne was never going to look at him like a colleague. He was just a wannabe. Even though he was on an equal or greater genius level as far as tech.
Right, for sure. Absolutely. But you had that, them trying, the whole, every book of with them in it is them trying to prove themselves as heroes. And a lot of times through some erroneous act of karma or just straight good fortune managing to make it happen. Like when the thing I didn't get into when I was talking about my, you know, the death of Blue Beetle was that, you know, when they set off the bomb in Ted Kord's house that took down Booster, he couldn't be there to help Blue Beetle when he went and got himself shot. So he took it very seriously, and that's when he dropped off the page, because they were always there. If they didn't have anyone else, they had each other.
Exactly.
And that was a cool conceit for a comic book, is these two kind of third-tier guys, one guy with a bunch of stolen tech from the future, one guy with a bunch of non-lethal tech that was never going to get any recognition, trying to make a name for themselves in a world of Batmans and Supermans and Wonder Womans.
Exactly. And also, the one of the curious things with the dynamic there is... you know, depending on how much of a study or a aficionado of the, how would I say this, the history of the superheroes that he wanted to emulate, Booster Gold was, you know, he kind of had to know potentially what Ted Kord's fate was.
Right, right.
And have to question, you know, his...
Well, I think that
the end of that ride was an inevitability.
Well, I think by then Skeets had been out of the picture. So,
oh, that's right. Skeets was kind of like the Wikipedia.
Yeah, it was his Ziggy. If you are quantum leaping it.
That's right. Yeah. See, he didn't have to know any history. It was all handed to him by a flying Siri.
The other really cool thing about their relationship is they were always trying to buy into these get rich quick schemes.
Oh, that's right.
Like, every fifth issue was them trying to, like, the Cooey... Did you ever read Cooey, Cooey, Cooey?
No, I...
So, the Cooey, Cooey, Cooey story, I read it a long time ago, and I haven't read it since then, but it was in Justice League International, and it was really the catalyst for a lot of the further goings of Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, where they... invested in a tropical island with the idea that not only are they going to invest there, but it's the place for the Justice League to go on vacations. Turns out that the island is alive.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and it really represents the time in which everybody kind of turned against them because they convinced everybody to invest in this thing. They went out to the island's alive and goes after them, and then everybody, you know, anytime that they, now they're crying wolf, anytime that anybody comes to them, you know, every time that they need anything, they're like, oh, is it Cooey 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 again? Because the island was alive, man. Like, that's great. That's friggin' great. Only Mateus and De Mateus and Geffen would pull something like that off.
Exactly.
So what other ones do you have in the grand scheme of things?
Wow, let's see here. There are just so many that are invoked, and one of the ones I think is really kind of cool is where an old school character becomes sort of paired up with a modern late arrival, really, and in this case, an arrival from outside of comics.
Okay, I'm listening.
And that is, I stumbled on one of the lists. And I'm like, you know, that is actually ideal for this. On the opposite side of the hero coin, you've got Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn,
Ah, yeah.
which seems to be a recurring theme in things that I am vaguely aware of and things I've actually read. But you know, and I think it's an interesting dynamic there because they are one of those great unlikely pairings that somehow works.
Right, they do. And again, you have the botanist turned supervillain, call back to the Floronic Man,
Yeah.
straight-laced, you know, scientist, so albeit super sultry and, you know, kind of noir villainess feelings, you know, going on there, but still. And then you got the wild and crazy comic book version, early comic book version of Harley Quinn. You know, bonk him on the head, run around, you know,
Yeah.
puddin' type stuff. Made for a really interesting dynamic, and it was a really
Well,
cool comic to read.
you bring up the you know the botanist aspect for Poison Ivy, but it occurs to me that I think maybe one of the reasons that works is these are both educated
Ah, you're right.
professionals. These are, you know, scholars
You're correct, sir. I didn't even
who
dawn
have
on me.
turned to crime. Oh, it's the Martha effect.
Is that what it is?
It is. It's exactly what's at work there. But yes, you have these basically these couple of characters that you know they are educated professionals who have abandoned their academia in favor of super villainy.
Supervillania is the word you're
Super
looking
Vol
for.
Now, Super Villainia is actually a neighbor, the sister city. To Muggerville.
Is that right?
Yes, indeed, Supervillainia.
That's a good one. I also like, if we're talking about female friendships, there was a friendship between, it was fairly recent, I guess, in the last 10 years.
It's what we call a flowmance.
A flow. I oddly, I kind of like that. I kind of like that. I'm sure I'll get in trouble for liking that, but I kind of
I
like
know.
that.
I'll get in trouble for saying that. Just like boom, right off the top of my head, then I realized that was not the best phrasing.
But Jessica Drew and Carol Danvers have this really cool relationship now, where almost like a Spider-Man Iceman or a Spider-Man Hawkeye type relationship, where, you know, they're just constantly jabbing at each other. It's there was an issue of New Avengers that they were in together, where there was like a meeting at Avengers, you know, Avengers Tower, and they were there. And at this point, Jessica Drew was dating Clint Barton, and Mockingbird was there, and their entire shtick the entire time was just was basically Captain Marvel trying to navigate and kind of run defense for Jessica Drew, so that because she would just be like, "You don't look now, but Mockingbird giving you the buffalo eye. We should probably move." Like that was the entire thing. It
Exactly.
was like really, really cool. I really liked that dynamic, and you know, it got to the point where when Jessica Drew was pregnant in her comic, Captain Marvel was taking her to the sword facility for prenatal care, like alien prenatal tech, like the best in the universe. We're gonna get you the best,
yeah.
like just really cool little things.
Yeah, just some of those John Byrne Kryptonian robot. Robotic midwifery that just runs rampant in science fiction, apparently.
Taking it to Shark Tank, robotic midwifery.
There you go. If the Star Wars prequels taught me anything, for robotic midwifery, all you need is a robot with one arm that looks like one of those Hi-Li paddles.
Can we take a...
I don't know, like a baby catcher or something?
It is. They're 5 paces back. You don't understand how Martian
induction
works. I was
just waiting for it to turn its head and spit, you know?
Martian induction. I want to talk about Captain America for a second. Can we talk about
Martha?
Yes? Martha is... Can the guy? I love the guy. The guy's had a lot of friendships. He's had sidekicks. We're not talking about sidekicks here. We're talking about friends. He's had a lot of sidekicks, but the man takes in more strays than Batman
does. Oh,
he does.
Look no further
than his friendship with D-Man.
Well, D-Man is truly the, you know, talk about taking the wrong guy to the party just because.
I kind of feel like D-Man's the life of the party, though.
I think he just, like, Cap has to, you know, he feels kind of responsible for D-Man in a way. That, you know, he needs to be, like, the one friend D-Man can count on having for fear of, you know, if he doesn't have at least one good superhero friend, it's just a gateway to Super-Villania.
It's a passport to Super-Villania.
Turnpike into Super-Villania.
It is a passport to Super-Villania. Yeah. That's what it is. Speaking of passport to Super-Villania, there's one friendship that we haven't talked about yet that I think is unique, almost unique in comic books, and that is the friendship of Reed Richards and Victor Von Doom.
Oh, that's
the Mad
true.
Doctor. Yeah, like that is a very, or you could say Doc Connors in Spider-Man, or Morbius the Living Vampire in Spider-Man, or there's a whole bunch of, like the superhero, supervillain Reed Richards Namor / Reed Richards Doom, you know, where it's more of an intellectual, you know, frenemies type.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, where they're. They would be arch enemies, but for the fact that their friendship takes the arch out of it.
Well, what it comes down to, and you see it a lot in Marvel, I don't think you see it as much in DC, but you see it a lot in Marvel. There were some instances, there was a really cool comic that spun, that was part of the countdown to the New 52, where it was, I believe it was Ivo and Magnus. Dr. Ivo and Dr. Magnus. Who did the Metal Men? Was it Magnus?
It was Dr. Magnus, yeah.
Okay.
Will Magnus.
Where they were friends. But Ivo was locked up. So Magnus would visit Ivo in crazy criminal prison, like you know, super genius prison, and you know, bring him things and talk to him about, you know, science, and that was cool. But this is sort of the same relationship where when you're one of the you know, and there's a list for Marvel, there's always a running list of the top 10 smartest.
Oh yeah, it's
people.
Like check out the big brain on Reed.
Yeah, so you know, your Hank Pym's, your Starks, your Reeds, your Amadeus Cho's, your Victor Von Doom. What was that?
Hank McCoy. He's like
Hank McCoy. Yes, absolutely, yeah, Hank McCoy.
He may be the bottom of the class, but the guy at the bottom of the class is still pretty damn smart.
Right. So I think at that point, all whatever you do to try to build a time tile, or you know, an ultimate nullifier, or you know, Doom bots, all goes out the window when you've reached a level of intellect that you can use to wipe the slate clean at any point in time.
Well, that and the fact that, you know, in those small hours of the night when you're restless and no matter how accustomed you are to sleeping in a full suit of armor, it's just there's some nights you just can't get to sleep. And it's 4 p.m. in Manhattan. You know, you pick up the phone and you call Reed and you're like, you know, you just like talk about stuff just like when you were in university.
At uni, yeah.
Yeah, at uni, as they call it in Latveria. And you know, you just kind of, for that briefest moment, it's like, okay, I'll be in the States next week and kill you.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Yeah, I'm coming.
I'm coming for you, Reed. All right.
I'm gonna stop you. I will destroy you, Richards. Good to talk to you, Vic.
Yeah. All right, Vic. We'll talk tomorrow. Get some rest. But, like, when you're that smart, you can only...
It's like I can go to bed now because you just talking to you is the best sleep aid ever.
But when you're that smart, it's like heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? There's this weird relationship right now between...
Heavy is the head that wears a big brain.
Exactly. But another great example of frenemies in comics currently, or at least recently, is the relationship between T'Challa and Namor, who are at war with, whose countries are at war with each other. But they're
like colleagues in the past.
The thing is, you understand, right? Like no matter how much you hate each other, if you're the only other person that understands the situation that you're currently in, you know, if there's only two of you, you're gonna be friends. You're gonna be a weird friendship, you know?
So same idea, you know, if one of them can't sleep, they're just picking up the red phone and call each other.
Right, I'm gonna drop the bomb. No, you're not. It's 2 a.m. I'm sending my army. They're not even gonna be here for 3 hours. I don't care how fast they can swim.
Yeah, and I've seen, like, your little crab tanks. Those things take forever to get to the field of operation.
Right. But yeah, there's that frenemy.
Maybe
thing.
You should like take a few, you know, like maybe when you get to land, you switch out to the tank treads or wheels or something. Not workable underwater. I get it, but once you get to land, you really need to think. I shouldn't have given you advice on that.
Let's call it best friends of circumstance.
Yeah,
you don't have another choice really besides.
Well, you understand the pressures of sovereignty as well. You can't just you know. If the rest of the country is let's go take the fight to those blue-skinned devils and their white boy leader, which is just how many decades has it been? We still can't get our head around this one. No, it's okay. He's like the first mutant or whatever.
Yeah, and in this particular instance, the story that I'm reading currently, there are Earths smashing into each other, like the multiverse. There are these incursions where Earths are smashing into each other. So as part of the most elite group of superheroes, they have to work together, regardless of the fact that terrestrially...
meanwhile, back home, we're...
Right, they're at war. Universally, the world's... not only our world is coming to an end, but all worlds are coming to an end, and they're trying to find a way to stop it. So where does the... You know, where do you draw the line there? As you know, so it's an interesting kind of...
Yeah, you have to go to the secret meeting of Super Mensa there to...
And that's what it is. Yes. Awesome. That was good. So what else you got...
Well, there's some obvious ones. Power Man and Iron Fist.
I love it.
Who, you know, and Captain America and Falcon, who are these classic team ups that had their beginnings at a time when, you know, it wasn't some, you know, nobody was going to call it miscegenation or anything like that, but it was still, you know, the idea of putting the two heroes together of different racial and even sometimes class designations was a pretty bold move, and you know, kind of sent a message in a way, very subtly, in the way that comics can sometimes do that, in much the same way that, like, you know, Star Trek would occasionally overstep or transcend what it was essentially to send powerful messages.
Right, right. The allegory, the metaphor, the idea that these two are together fighting crime was pretty awesome.
And it's not a race thing. It's not like, hey, let's all get together and make this work. It's just they happen to be very good friends who just happen to also cross these racial barriers without thinking about it. And I think that's where a lot of that comes from, because it didn't, you for the most part weren't beaten about the face and head with the fact that this was a racially diverse team up.
Right. And
at a time when there wasn't a lot of racial diversity.
And if you look at things like, and there's another whole class of comic book friendship that isn't a sidekick relationship, but it's more of a mentor mentee friendship. And the big one of that for me is Captain America and Hawkeye, where Captain America decided to give Hawkeye a shot, being that he was a former criminal turned hero. And since then, Hawkeye has done nothing but, you know, consider Captain America's friendship and try to live up to the towering example that he sets, down to the point where there was a really cool issue, and I still have it somewhere, and it's basically a one-off where they have to switch weapons in the middle of a fight, and it was just really cool that the reverence that was portrayed with Hawkeye having to take up the shield,
actually holding this iconic
and then being pretty upset because Captain America was pretty good with a bow, like.
I wish I was Taskmaster.
was a really cool, like, I'm trying to think of other mentor mentee. I guess Wolverine gets pretty close with like Kitty Pride and Jubilee and
Wolverine had a tendency to kind of like take the young ones under his wing or be the one that they gravitated toward in this like great 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 grandfatherly way. I'm old enough to be for your grandfather with a whole lot of greats before it.
That's true. There's a four. There's a great with a hypertext four above it.
Great, great cubed.
Right. But yeah, but then again, when we talk about Wolverine,
by the way, Great Cubed was that intergalactic nemesis of the Muggerville 7. You remember that one?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's a great story arc.
It was. It was the
Cubed King. He was sort of like the Galactus of the Muggerville 7.
Yeah. I was thinking like somewhere between Galactus and Thanos.
Yeah, pretty much. It was just Great Cubed.
But... but you can't consider Wolverine almost because of his, you know, I'm the best at what I do, and what I do is just be really aloof.
Yeah, I'm the lone wolf mentor.
Right, and I got like, this really.
I need some help with that one now. I gotta go hunt. I gotta go kill somebody from my past. So I could, can I do a ride along or something? How am I gonna learn any of this superhero stuff? Stay at home. I don't have space in my cadre of one for an adventure-eyed teen.
Damn it! But no, I had this really funny mental image of at some point, like Wolverine getting ready to storm out of X Mansion, you know, like gets a fight with Scott, and he's like, "Bub, I don't need this. I don't need this, bub." Like Batman, almost Batman style.
I think it's remarkable that both of our Wolverines sound exactly like our own Batman.
It's because they're the same damn character.
I am the day.
And he turns around to leave.
I gotta be in bed by 9.
And he goes to grab his wallet off the counter, and it falls over. And somebody goes to help him pick it up, and this is all in my head. You know, flips it open, and all the various membership cards for every team. I work alone. I just need my wallet.
It's just this accordion wallet.
That's right. You don't know. You can leave that. Don't pick that. Don't look. Oh, damn it. Don't look in there. Don't look. No, that's not a Defenders card. That's a Defenders punch card. I'm almost to my free Nighthawk. Leave it there.
That's not a picture of my kitten. It came with a wallet.
It came with a wallet.
That's not Mr. Rum Tum Tugger.
Listen. What? Listen, that's nothing weird. That's just a picture of me in the power pack. Just put it back.
I was mentoring them for a day.
For a day. They got more out of that one day they ever got with that goddamn seahorse.
It's more of a land horse. Shut up.
Shut up. Okay. You don't know me.
You don't know me, bub.
I'm a loner.
You have to say bub, otherwise it's indistinguishable from Batman.
From Batman! That's the only thing. There's one word on either side that distinguishes it, either Martha or bub. Those are the two words.
Just Batman started going around calling everybody Martha. Get out of the way, Martha. How is that a thing? Martha's my bub.
Martha's my bub. Martha, bub. No, I can't tell what you're... Who are you? Oh, my God. All right, we've got to wrap this up.
Okay, I want to touch real quickly on Spider-Man / Any Yuckster.
Okay.
And Spider-Man and Human Torch is one that constantly comes up in surveys of these types of relationships that Andy found that you found in your research.
Yeah.
But another one that seems to have been lost in the shuffle because he's more associated with some of his fellow X-Men like Beast is is the Iceman Human Torch.
Yes.
It's the occasional just sort of playful romance rivalry between the two. Where, I mean, that was one of the things I remember seeing this thing. It was like Spider-Man, Iceman, and Human Torch. And it really, in retrospect, struck me as someone actually brilliantly capturing the way that adult men show affection for each other. And that is by doing things like creating fire lassos that the other one then snips apart with giant ice scissors.
Right.
And we all do that all the time, granted in a much more literal sense. Or much more figurative sense, rather.
Whoever wrote that book had to be exhausted all the time. poor writer had to be exhausted all the time. Yeah,
but anytime you got Spider-Man together with anybody else who was sort of the class clown of their group, there was always a good dynamic, because it was, you know, Spider-Man works well with the ones who can't shut up like himself.
Well, and I wonder, do you think that they ever, you know, let's say the Avengers Mansion or Fantastic Four or, you know, again, the Defenders or the X-Men or anybody else that Spider-Man has been a member of their team, do you think that they ever got together, all of them, sat him down, said, listen, Spider-Man's like, wait, is this an intervention? Yes, this is an intervention. You need to slow down. Stay in your lane. We're all friends here. You can
tone it down.
You can stop.
Also, and this is the important part, we're professionals. You have been in this business for 55 years.
Almost longer than anyone else in this room.
Yeah, and, you know, only Ambush Bug is worse than you.
We would prefer to have Deadpool here.
Yeah, we are honestly considering replacing you with Deadpool because he is slightly less annoying. another one I really wanted to touch on real quick, because there's not a lot of history I'm aware of, because I'm refusing to read before, guess what follows before Watchmen. But the dynamic of Night Owl and Rorschach.
Yes.
Is a brilliant, because it was prior to before Watchmen, and I'm sure they touched on this more heavily there. You had that implicit history. You know, we were allowed as readers to understand through just a handful of things being imparted to us the history of these two characters before Rorschach just went crazy.
Right.
Where he was, his biggest strength was being completely unpredictable. And you could practically write your own, or, you know, I wish Alan Moore had written, if anybody's going to write anything before Watchmen, that's the only thing that makes any sense.
Right.
Because there was that enduring and endearing history between the two that Dan Driver can look back on and remember. You know, I remember a time when you weren't just completely... you know, to steal a term from Alan Moore, crazy as a football bat.
By the way, that's the title of our next Super Sports Balls.
Oh, crazy as a football bat. I like that. And one final one I want to challenge you with, and this is also from the Moore camp, just coincidentally, because right at the top of the show, it suddenly occurred to me, here is a buddy picture of unexpected magnitude.
Uh-oh. All right.
American Gothic, Swamp Thing, and John Constantine.
Oh, my God, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
To the point where it is John Constantine who ultimately becomes the vehicle through which this champion of the green can impregnate a mammal.
Well, he
took over John Constantine's body so he and Abby could have a child.
Well, it's this story of a monster that wants to be a man, and a man that wants to just not exist in the way that we think of existence.
Well, the important thing with that particular buddy picture is he has to come in and kind of be the bad guy.
Yeah,
To get Alec Holland out of Swamp Thing and get Swamp Thing back into the green because of how vital. There's this shadow war brewing behind the Crisis on Infinite Earths that no one knows about. You know, that was the big conceit in the Crisis, is only those who were there at the beginning of time know what really happened. But even they don't know.
Right.
What was going on in the mystical realm.
Yeah, yeah. That would be amazing.
And it, you know, and it tied very perfectly into the whole thing with the, you know, that giant hand that was a prevailing theme in Crisis turning out to be the Spectre.
Right.
Because that is facilitated with brilliantly and subtly within the pages of Swamp Thing with zero fanfare.
Exactly.
DC did not go out of their way to say, oh, by the way, you're going to see the catalyst for that hand in this brilliant storyline that suggests, but for John Constantine, the Crisis would not have met its successful conclusion.
That's great, because it's almost it starts as a friendship of necessity and ends with genuine, I think, adoration and respect.
I was about to say mutual respect, that the entity that is Swamp Thing, you know, laced with inklings of Alec Holland's personality still, you know, he embraces what he truly is, but doesn't abandon things like the humanity that allows his love and affection for Abby, for example.
And I think it's important to note that when we're talking about Constantine, he's a man who can beg, borrow, steal, and swindle his way to anything besides finding, and I think this is his biggest challenge, is finding people in his life that he can genuinely respect and see as an equal. And in Alec Holland, in Swamp Thing, he finds that. And it's really hard to let go when you do, you know?
It's quite literally gods and monsters are the only peers that he has, because and a handful of trusted friends in a kind of, like, you know, Lovecraftian principal character base way.
Right, in a weird cabal where no one really trusts each other.
Yeah, or that kind of Doc Savage and his team.
Right. That's a good example.
Because during American Gothic, you're kind of introduced to this sort of Doc Savage-esque cast of characters that are vitally important, but, you know, independently would be worthless.
Right. Oh, man, you're absolutely right. So that is a great way. I don't think I could think of a better landing pad for that. I couldn't find a better...
I think it's typified by the way you and I met. You know, there was that sort of meeting of necessity, and then we slowly began to create. No, that was nothing like how we met.
Right, and then you...
I was thinking of that very special episode of How I Met Your Mother, where they tried to add a little, you know, gothic horror to the mix.
Right, where Barney's a vampire and lives in a cat. Yeah, that old
thing. Yeah, that didn't work. It was like Baywatch Nights.
God, I love that show. That and Silk Stockings, man. You all day.
I know it. I know what you love.
Well, why don't we wrap this up and we'll get out of here?
Yes, indeed. Well, we're coming to you for the infinite bromance that is the Jedi Cole universe. JediCole.com. You can write to us with your man love at JCUmail@yahoo.com. We will tweet our tweet stylings to you. Or was it Snickety Tweets?
Snickety Tweets.
Snickety Tweets.
Our Snickety Tweets, yes.
Snickety Tweets on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. And of course, look for myself and Eddie Medina on the first and third Sundays of every month on WatchOnAirLive.com for the Rancor Pit Live, streaming live out of the CBS studios in sunny Dallas, Texas, which is actually becoming rather sunny now. The last time it was pouring rain. And Eddie and I, we made the announcement on the last live show. We are embarking on May the 4th, on Star Wars Day, on May the 4th, be with you, at Burleson, Texas, at the Burleson Rec Center, also known as BRIC. We are going to be hosting the ceremonies there for Star Wars Day on, I think it's a Thursday, May the 4th, as the launch pad of the Rancor Pit Roadshow Summer Invasion 2017, the first of seven stops between May 4 and I believe it is August 12th. We are going to be some busy campers. We will be also appearing at Famous Monsters Convention in Dallas. We'll be at a couple of comic shops on the tour, including our the very wonderful Galaxy Called Dallas.
Yeah.
For yet another appearance there. And of course, we're ending everything at Infinicon 2017 in Addison. As I said, a lot of styles in between the DFW, G.I. Joe, and Toy Show. We've got, oh gosh, I've lost track, but we'll have the formal announcements been made. We'll start to have that both on the Jedi Cole Universe website. We'll have the tour dates as well as the over at the Convention Awareness Texas. cap-tx.info, because you can't go if you don't know. If you want to find out all the conventions, there are 71 or 72 conventions still coming up this year so far, which means that we'll probably yet again exceed 100, keep it 100 Texas, and we hope to see you at as many of the roadshow stops as you can manage. We're really excited about Famous Monsters. We're going to bring the Galactic Games to Famous Monsters, and we're hoping to also, you know, maybe expand beyond that. I'm waiting to hear back how the proposal I put forward just today panned out.
Nice. Yeah, and also remember, if you like the shows you hear, you know, if you like Hey Kids Comics, if you like the Rantcore, if you like any of the things that you hear on the Jedi Cole Universe, bop on over to iTunes, find us on there, rate and review. The more people that do that, the better off we're going to be for finding advertisers, for getting events, for getting stops, more stops on things like Cole's Alderaan to Tatooine world tour that he's going on with Eddie. It's a great way for advertisers to figure out who we are and what we're doing. So please go rate and review us on iTunes. I usually post the links on Twitter for this show, but you can find all the shows on those links. So thank you so much for listening.
Because as we'll say on the roadshow tour, baby, we were born to Alderaan.
Tramps like us.
Tramps like us, baby. We're born to Alderaan.
All right, and on that note, we're going to get out of here. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics.
And more College Hoops, baby!
Oh, more College Hoops. Yes, more College Hoops.
College Hopes.
College Hopes. All right. Say goodnight, Cole Vitale.
Good night, everybody. Balloon drop!